KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Good morning. This is live special coverage from NPR News of the 2025 presidential inauguration. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. President-elect Trump has arrived at the U.S. Capitol to be sworn in for his second term. This is a political comeback for a president who lost office in 2020, was indicted for his effort to overturn his defeat, and was convicted of other felonies before winning election again. And this is a dramatic symbol of that. President Biden is on hand, the departing president. Vice President Harris, the candidate Trump defeated. Former President Obama is here. Mike Pence just arrived at the U.S. Capitol, Trump's former vice president. Trump supporters called for him to be hung in 2021. He is here to see this swearing in. And for the first time in 1985, the ceremony will take place indoors, inside the U.S. Capitol Rotunda. Due to the cold weather, the temperature is falling just a bit, about 23 degrees here in Washington today.
Mr. Trump will deliver his inauguration speech to a crowd of 750 people inside the Capitol. Other people on hand include tech CEOs, including Tesla's Elon Musk, Meta's Mark Zuckerberg, Amazon's Jeff Bezos. Some of the hundreds of thousands of ticketed attendees who were expected on the National Mall will now watch from a nearby arena, where the inaugural parade will also be held later today.
And the events that we're covering today are just the beginning of what we expect to be a dramatic beginning to the new administration. President-elect Trump has promised a number of executive orders just about as soon as he has sworn in, and we'll be talking about them in the minutes and hours to come. A focus on curbing legal migration as well as illegal immigration, also deporting people who are in the U.S. without legal status. He has 4 years to govern, yet the way that American politics works, he has much less. A midterm election is coming. People are already thinking about 2028. People already talk of Trump as a lame duck because it is his second term and he's barred by the Constitution from running again. Lots to watch, and we're going to bring it to you live with help from our colleagues in the studio and in the field. NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson and NPR senior White House correspondent Tamara Keith are here. They've covered all the dramatic events of the Trump era the past decade. And Tam, what does it mean to move this ceremony indoors, for starters? We should note the rotunda, as people watching on our video feed can see, is quite crowded, just about everybody on hand at this point.
Yeah, certainly this means that there will be far fewer people able to watch President Trump's inauguration in person. They had issued tickets to hundreds of thousands of people potentially to attend. However, the weather is very cold, and there is a wind chill factor that, even though the number doesn't seem that low, once you add the wind chill, it is very, very cold. And so the decision was made to move it indoors. Trump said it was related to the weather. And so what it means is that it won't be the image that many people have seen of inaugurations. And it won't even look exactly like the 1985 inauguration of President Ronald Reagan, because there are seats in this room, at least some. For Reagan, it was a sort of a standing room only situation.
Can I just mention, Mara Liasson, let's talk a little bit about the scenery inside the U.S. Capitol Rotunda. I was thinking about some of the people who will be in attendance, in effect, because it moved. Andrew Jackson will attend this inauguration because it's a statue of one of Trump's famous presidents, a populist president. Dwight Eisenhower is in that room. Trump has repeatedly referred to Eisenhower because he did a mass deportation. Ronald Reagan is there. Truman is there. Grant is there. Washington and Lincoln are there. This is a very different ceremony than it would have been outside in the cold air.
Right. Well, you're talking about the statuary. Yes. Because the images of these former presidents wouldn't be outside, but they are inside. And yeah, it makes for different visuals. Of course, in addition to all of those former presidents, we've also got a bunch of, you can call them business leaders or oligarchs, depending on your point of view. That's unusual for a inauguration. You've got Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk, of course. These are big donors to the president.
If anybody wondered,
they have
lots of business before
the federal government.
If anybody wondered if they would make the top 750 to fit in there, now we know.
You're right.
Also saw the chairman of Apple. We saw the chairman of Google. Not names that you've seen associated with this administration so far, but they are all there.
Tamara Keith, let's talk a little bit about the executive orders. There is some substance. We should just note that in the next few minutes, we're going to hear some performances. Carrie Underwood, Lee Greenwood, some other people. We're going to hear the swearing in and see the swearing in for those following us on video. Vice President J.D. Vance, as well as President Trump. There's going to be an inaugural address, but then there's going to be action today. What are some of the things that President-elect Trump intends to do today so far as we know?
There is a broad suite of executive actions that the incoming Trump White House has already previewed in calls with reporters as well as calls with members of Congress. Immigration is a big area there. There are 10 different points related to immigration that we are expecting, that they have told us to expect, that would include declaring a national emergency at the border, clarifying the roles of the military, also designating criminal cartels as terrorist organizations, ending refugee resettlement or suspending refugee resettlement, ending asylum, essentially closing the border. Also an executive action to end birthright citizenship, which is in the U.S. Constitution.
The birthright citizenship is part of the 14th Amendment. Trump's people have an argument that a particular phrase may give them a little bit of leeway. And as you're telling me this, I'm seeing the members of the United States Supreme Court, led by John Roberts, the Chief Justice, on their way into the United States Capitol. It's conceivable that that executive order is going to be challenged in court, and it will end up being these justices who decide if this president can change the understood meaning of the United States Constitution, in effect.
Right. And to, just to clarify on what Trump administration officials say that he would do, is he would end birthright citizenship for the children of people who are in the country illegally. So that is what they are trying to do. But yeah, it's not even conceivable. It is guaranteed that this is going to be challenged in court as soon as it is signed, and that this is going to be a big legal battle. I think the broader effort here by the Trump White House is essentially a shock and awe on day one to sign a big stack of executive actions to say, he's president, he's here, he's going to rescind what Biden did, he is going to keep his promises. Repeatedly during the campaign, he talked about day one promises.
One of the other promises that he made, Tam and Mara, you may want to jump in on this, is to exact retribution against people that he was angry at or people he felt had wronged him, particularly people in the government. Now, a bit of news this morning, President Biden issued a number of pardons directed at people who had served on, for example, the Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Just talk about that for a minute. He had been urged to do this by people outside of the government in some fairly strong terms and some op-eds, for example, but we really didn't know that he was taking that seriously.
Yeah, this came as something of a surprise, though maybe not a shock, this morning when President Biden issued this statement saying that he was going to grant preemptive pardons to Dr. Anthony Fauci. He is the infectious disease specialist who really became the face of the COVID pandemic. Mark Milley, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who had accused Trump of fascism and Trump has openly bashed, as well as members of the January 6th committee and law enforcement who testified before that committee, as well as staff who worked on that committee. We don't know if everyone is going to accept these pardons. Biden said that the pardons are not an admission of guilt and not an acknowledgement of any sort of wrongdoing. This is not normal for
President. And this is certainly a hard call because these individuals assert they did nothing wrong. And in fact, one of them, Liz Cheney, has said, if you come after me, if any lawyer was involved in any effort to prosecute me, they would be in trouble with the law for a false prosecution. Mara Lyons.
Yeah, first of all, we don't know how many of these preemptive pardons will be accepted, but Donald Trump has threatened to execute, because he said some of these people have committed treason, or kick out of the country in the case of Jack Smith. So he has made specific threats against many, many people, a lot of whom are on this list that Biden issued preemptive pardons for. Some of them might not be accepted. But we've never had a president come into office with specific plans for retribution and revenge like Donald Trump has had.
Go ahead, Tim.
And we should just say that President Trump's pick for FBI director, we don't know if he'll be confirmed, but he has an enemies list and has said people should be prosecuted and jailed. And many of these people are on his list. Now, the incoming likely confirmed attorney general has said that she will not pursue political prosecution.
I just want to note as we continue this discussion and before we move
around
the Capitol.
Well, she has only said she doesn't have an enemies list. Angeles. She didn't say that she wouldn't.
Before we move around the Capitol, we'll just note this is a moment of celebration for many people. Fine outfits, fine hats in many cases as people file in. Former First Lady Melania Trump is here, ready to resume that role. Many people on hand, and the ceremony will begin shortly, Michelle.
And the children, the grown children, none of them are small children, but the children of the soon-to-be president returning to the Capitol, some of whom had roles in the prior administration, some of whom have decided not to have similar roles in his next administration. As we mentioned, we have reporters all over town, and they're in that slimmed-down public viewing area that that was hastily put together because of the weather. Let's go to check in with that slimmed-down public viewing at the Capitol One Arena in downtown Washington, which is where normally sporting events take place. White House correspondent Deepa Shivaram has been there all morning as people are lining up to get into the arena. Good morning, Deepa. How are you doing?
Good morning, Michelle. It feels like 12 degrees outside. I just checked my phone right before I started talking to you.
Nice coat,
I think it's
though.
About 23 officially, but it genuinely feels like 12. Thank you. Had to bundle up many, many layers deep here. And so have all of the people who have been in line for hours and hours and hours. I talked to someone at around 10 a.m., so an hour ago, who had already been in line since around 7, and he was maybe halfway inside to getting into the arena. But as you guys were talking about earlier, I mean, there is a limited number of people who will actually make it inside to Capitol One. So there are a lot of people who have just gathered here today, who have been walking around. We've been chatting with them. Who have just, you know, come to see the scene. And so what the scene is, I don't know how much you can see behind me, but there's a lot of vendors around here who are selling merchandise, a lot of Make America Great Again hats, sweatshirts, people selling a lot of hand warmers, as you can imagine, as folks stay warm. And I will say, as Michelle pointed out, this is an area of D.C. The Capital One Arena is where a lot of D.C.'s sporting teams play. So we're talking about the ice hockey team, the Caps, the Wizards team. And so typically this is a really bustling area during those games and other, you know, other events going on in the city. This is very organized, I will say. There's like swirling lines all over the area. It's been very orderly. Not a lot of counter protests or anything going on right now. It's a lot of folks who have just been standing in line, and some folks who are kind of just here to check things out. I talked to a couple folks, one group of guy friends who came in from Baton Rouge. They drove up to D.C., and they were saying that they were kind of disappointed, obviously, that this isn't taking place on the mall. They were prepared to go see the parade and things like that, and instead they've just been wandering around. They were expecting things to be a little bit more chaotic, and I think because of the weather, obviously, and given the smaller footprint of all of this, it's actually been fairly calm and just a lot of folks who are expressing a lot of hope, excitement.
What's the yelling? I hear some yelling. Is it people yelling to sell things, or are people yelling because they are cold, or what is that? What am I hearing?
All of the above. It's a lot of vendors who are yelling for selling their goods. There's been a couple breakout chants of USA. Generally, a lot of excitement. I think the folks who have been, anti-Trump, who have been protesting, a very small footprint, I will say, truly just a couple people. That's been a couple blocks further from here. So in this area, it's really just folks who are just kind of excited.
What's the security presence like? I mean, we've seen sort of evidence of this really amped up security presence around the Capitol, you know, in the days leading up to it. What's it like there? Does it feel heavy? Does it feel, is there a fairly light touch?
No, I would not say a light touch, Michelle. There's street closures all over. So even our group, as we came in here today, had to walk several blocks just to get to this area. So a lot of street closures in D.C., big vehicles that are kind of blocking, cop cars that are blocking the streets, and just a lot of stanchions, a lot of, like, organization in the ways of, like, where people can and cannot walk. And I will say, like, it has been very streamlined. There aren't a lot of people who are just standing around for no reason. I wouldn't say at any point we've been stuck in crowds. It's been very organized in the way they're moving people around and making sure that there aren't just large crowds just kind of hanging out outside here.
Deepa, speaking of organized, we are now seeing the former presidents enter the chamber. We saw former Vice President Dan Quayle and Marilyn Quayle, former Second Lady Marilyn Quayle. We've now seen the former Secretary of State and former President Bill Clinton join the assembly, and they seemingly greeted very warmly from what we can see.
Everybody's standing, and we are waiting for the president-elect, the past president. This is just a remarkable thing to note. This is only the second time in American history that one of the former presidents attending the inauguration is the president. And we're hearing the fanfare. Everyone is standing. I think we can expect the president-elect to arrive shortly. And we'll continue bringing you live coverage as we can do this from the Capitol Rotunda. That's where we're listening to the band. That's where we're watching these few hundred people on a video feed.
The 43rd President of the United States, the Honorable George W. Bush, accompanied by Mrs. Laura Bush.
Okay, so we're getting another former president here. I guess we will expect to see President Obama as well be introduced the same way. Although we should note that whereas Laura Bush turned up for this ceremony, Michelle Obama has said that she will not.
Also, we saw the former Vice President Mike Pence. We saw him arrive at the Capitol. He has not been introduced yet. I note that Mrs. Pence does not seem to have accompanied her husband to this event as well.
If we're going up in chronological order, we can expect President Obama for this next one. Obama was also inaugurated on a very, very cold day back in 2009.
Ladies and gentlemen, the 44th President of the United States, the Honorable Barack H. Obama.
Obama walks in the dignified style you would expect, and I think we can note that he's shaking a few hands as he goes. And I think we can note that Obama and Trump will be forever linked in history. Trump rose in large measure in opposition to Obama, telling a lie about Obama's birthplace, and then opposing many of his policies once he came into office. Obama's vice president then was the person who defeated Trump and got him out of office in 2020, and now Trump comes back. And we wait for another announcement. You're listening to live coverage from NPR News. We seem to have lost the audio feed, so we'll continue watching. We're in Studio 42 here in Washington, D.C., and we're looking at a video feed.
Ladies and gentlemen,
here we go.
The Chief Justice of the United States, the Honorable John G. Roberts, Jr., and the Associate Justices of the Supreme Court of the United States.
Mara Liasson, as these justices in their robes walk in, familiar figures, all of them, is it fair to say that few people in Washington are likely to face more pressure in the years ahead than these nine justices who will be called upon to referee between the various competing interests in our system of checks and balances and called upon to weigh the actions of a new administration which says it wants dramatic change against the Constitution itself in some cases?
Yes, I think you could say pressure, or for some of them, maybe opportunities. Don't forget, they decided that presidents have tremendous immunity. Not, they weren't asked to do that. There wasn't a case that challenged it. But yes, they're going to have to decide a lot of things. When President Trump signs an executive order saying no birthright citizenship, does that mean for children of people who are here undocumented, does that mean that you can be a Norwegian tourist, come here, give birth,
yes,
and then your child is an American citizen?
And we await another announcement here. There will be moments of silence as we respectfully pass through this inauguration. The curtains open. This is live special coverage from NPR News.
Well, the choreography for this event has been arranged rather hastily, it has to be said. The order of arrivals would have been the same had the ceremony been outside at the Capitol.
They would have come down a kind of tunnel.
They would have come down a kind of tunnel, and we would have seen that. But now with the curtains raising and so forth, we would be seeing Mike Pence at this point because he's the one former office holder we have not yet seen before we see the president-elect. He came in already?
Yeah, he's already in.
But we're seeing the
Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States.
We're seeing Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff. We are seeing the,
I guess we should say, Attorney General of the United States for a few minutes more.
Okay.
We'll continue watching the people.
Tiffany Trump and Barron Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Children of the president-elect.
I have to say that we're seeing two different views here. We're seeing people who are arriving, walking down the hallway, and then we're also seeing them as they emerge.
Yeah. They're coming into a pretty dramatic ceremonial space. In addition to those statues, there are paintings of great moments in American history, ranging from, well, this is a famous one, Washington giving up his commission, essentially saying, I'm a victorious general. I could probably seize power. I'm not going to do it. I quit. I'm going home. At the end of the Revolutionary War, one of the dramatic paintings on the wall, another depicts the signing of the Declaration of Independence. There are frontier moments in the carvings of the Capitol. Daniel Boone fighting Indians, as they are described for that particular carving. This is a remarkable space that is connected with American history. It was planned before the War of 1812. British troops burned the Capitol before they got this dome built. The dome was completed, but not until 1863, in the middle of the Civil War. Tamara Keith, you must have walked through this Capitol Rotunda many times.
Indeed. Definitely walked through it many times. And traditionally, on an inauguration day, many of the dignitaries would walk through this rotunda on their way out to the west front of the Capitol. Yeah. I also just would note that on January 6th, 4 years ago, this rotunda was filled with people who were there trying to overturn the results of the last election.
Yes.
It was a stark scene to see this rotunda filled with people who were not authorized to be there. President Trump has promised that he will pardon, we don't know how many, but he will pardon on day one at least some of the people who were in the Capitol on January 6th.
This has always been a place that has symbolized conflict. That's one of the very rare occasions there's been actual conflict in the Capitol. Someone went through the Capitol carrying a Confederate flag in a hallway not far from this rotunda. But I should note that also among the statues in the U.S. Capitol are even today people who were Confederate leaders in the rebellion against the federal government in the 1860s, and in later years, their home states sent them into the Capitol once again, a sign that American democracy has not always been peaceful and definitely rarely been calm. But we have this moment where you do have people who were defeated in the room to solemnly mark the occasion of the victor.
And one of the things that you want to note is just how different, we sometimes think that we're sort of arguing over words, it's sort of mere semantics, but these words carry great meaning. Are the people who invaded the Capitol that day, are they patriots defending an important idea, according to supporters of President Trump, according to the people who support them and want them to be pardoned? Or are they domestic terrorists who are trying to overturn our system of government through force? And these are the kinds of things that we're going to be talking about in the days, months, and probably years ahead. What do these words mean?
Ladies,
what does it mean to be a patriot in this
Dr.
current
Biden
moment?
And Mr. Emhoff, the Republican staff director of the Joint Congressional Committee on Inaugural Ceremonies, Ms. Emily Leviner.
She brings
the Senate Secretary for the Minority, the Honorable Gary Myrick. The House of Representatives Chief Administrative Officer, the Honorable Catherine Spindor, and Mr. Bruce Fisher.
They bring the First Lady and the only second gentleman in the history of the United States.
The first and only second gentleman thus far. I was just thinking, as we're talking about words and the meaning, President Trump has previewed, and his team have previewed, that his remarks today are going to be about unity and strength. Now, how one president defines unity is very different from how another president defines unity. I would note that 4 years ago, President Biden actually issued a proclamation on his inauguration day declaring it a day of unity. Arguably, I'm pretty sure you could ask anyone in this country right now, do you feel like this country is in a moment of unity? And they would say, no, those other guys are terrible.
Well, many people define unity as, why don't you just agree with me? And that is the challenge of this moment, is for people to find what they do agree on, or do they agree on the basic system, the basic system of checks and balances, of laws and everything else.
Right. Well, you know, Michelle talked about how the January 6th riots will be seen. And, you know, Steve Bannon, who's kind of the personification of the MAGA base, has said famously, and this is an old quote, you know, the victors write the history. And, you know, there's going to be a big battle over what is the correct history of the January 6th moment.
Can I just mention, when we say the victors write the history, there are victors with different points of view who are represented in this room. Steve Bannon is not in this room, but has a particular point of view of what Trump should be doing.
Right.
Some of the tech executives here maybe have a different point of view about what that is.
Right. But in terms of January 6th, which is really a important moment in American history, where the Capitol was breached in an effort to overturn a free and fair election. Trump believes, and certainly Steve Bannon would agree with him, that it was patriots who tried to overturn an election that was rigged and stolen from him. And the January 6th Commission Select Committee, who spent months and months looking into this, have said no, this was an illegal attempt to stop the peaceful transfer of power, which is the bedrock of American democracy. So there's going to be, now Trump has the upper hand in terms of writing that history, and we don't know what we'll see on the Mall. Instead of monuments or exhibits devoted to civil rights leaders, maybe there'll be one devoted to the, quote, patriots of January 6th.
That is a fair point, and there's something else that will happen during these 4 years of the Trump presidency, and that is in 2026, I'm going to try to get this word correct, the semi-sesquicentennial, the 250th birthday of the United States. Major celebrations are planned. A lot of them are well underway. They've been planned for years, but the president of the United States is sure to be part of it, and I believe he has publicly said, this is something I want to be involved in, something that I'm interested in.
Well, absolutely. He also wanted that military parade, remember? And the military said, our tanks are too heavy. They'll ruin Pennsylvania Avenue. And he had to back off.
Tim.
Yeah, and I remember a 4th of July at the White House, actually it was in 2020, covering President Trump at the time, where there were flyovers of various military aircraft, and it was, and he was talking about patriotism, and he, in his first inaugural, talked about how Americans can be united behind this idea of patriotism. He also talks about success bringing unity. I talked to a former aide of his who
Keep
said
on.
That I was like, well, what does he mean by unity? Hmm. And he said that everyone is equally successful, whether they support him or not. I think that one of the big things that all of us will be watching is President Trump ran on, he says it, grocery prices and the border. We know what he's doing about the border. It's not clear what he is going to be able to do about grocery prices.
Well, we also know that this president has, frankly, like Barack Obama before him, has a very big footprint in the national culture.
Yes.
It's not just a matter of what he says and does politically. It's also a matter of the cultural tone that he sets. And so one of the things that I will be really interested in is what other direction the culture takes from what he's doing here. It's just interesting to see that his emissaries to Hollywood, whom he named apparently rather spontaneously to the point where apparently several of them didn't even really know that they were going to be named, from action heroes like Sylvester Stallone or Mel Gibson, John Voight, people who represent a kind of a certain kind of Hollywood. And also, I'm thinking about what Mara was saying about the January 6th attack. I mean, that was obviously one of the most documented events in our history. There were cameras there from every angle. People had access to what was happening there in real time. And then you also have the work of the Select Committee. So it'll be really interesting to see how the culture absorbs these competing narratives and which one takes hold. Because as we know, the culture often takes a turn that political leaders may not want or expect.
And speaking of cultural figures, Dana White, the USC president, is got one of the 750 tickets. We're also seeing an image of Elon Musk, who, if you asked 4 years ago, is Elon Musk even interested in this sort of thing? I'm not sure that people would have known for sure if he was or wasn't, but now we know he intensely is, and he is a huge cultural figure, a huge business figure, and clearly now also a huge political figure, along with other people who are close to the president who are in the room here today.
Yeah, and Dana White is the head of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. This is MMA, very popular, has grown hugely over the years. He is directly behind the former presidents of the United States in this room. So it is quite the mix of people. Dana White is a friend of President Trump's and is another one of these people who has helped Trump tap into a part of the electorate that has typically been very disengaged, which are young men. And Trump found a way, also with the help of his son, Barron, who is towering over everyone in that room. He is so tall.
Mm-hmm.
He found a way to tap into those young male voters who weren't even voters before, got them engaged, and that's part of how he won.
I want to point out that this is Inauguration Day, but it is also the day that we commemorate and acknowledge the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., a towering figure in American life and our culture. And to acknowledge that, I want to bring in Reverend William Lamar IV. He is pastor of Metropolitan AME Church here in Washington, D.C., not far from where the inaugural ceremonies are taking place. It is also a place, a storied place, where towering figures like Paul Laurence Dunbar and Frederick Douglass once worshipped. Reverend Lamar is with us now. Reverend Lamar, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be a part of the coverage.
And obviously one of the reasons we called you is that the inauguration falling on Martin Luther King Day, you think a lot about his legacy and civil rights and how this fits into our politics today. I was just wondering what this, the confluence of these events brings up for you today.
Well, it is indeed a day for rich reflection. I think that the King legacy has been hijacked in many ways. And I think that what I really want to talk about is his speech about a world house, that we together live in a single place together and global solidarity is necessary. I also want to lift up his speech when he talked about the triple evils of poverty, racism, war. And I think that we get stuck on the dream without unpacking that it was a demand that a check that was written to the children of the enslaved for justice and for citizenship and for justice had been returned non-sufficient funds. So I think that King needs to be unfrozen from a national narrative that makes him a mascot for empire. He really was when he spoke of the revolution of values necessary here, economically, spiritually, and politically.
Reverend Lamar, I want to mention that as we are speaking, Melania Trump, the wife of the president-elect, soon to be president again, and Usha Vance, the wife of the soon-to-be vice president, are walking into the Capitol. We will be seeing them enter shortly. You know, in 2020, I'm sure you remember this better than anyone, but pro-Trump rallygoers and Proud Boy members destroyed a Black Lives Matter sign in front of your church. And I just wondered how that moment sits with you now. Is it something that members of the congregation still think about? Does it carry feeling and meaning for you these years later?
Well, I think that the one thing we must recall is that had those persons who came for January 6th looked Ladies like me would have had a different outcome, and the challenge of the Proud Boys breaching our property, thinking that they had a right to step onto a space that was set aside for worship and justice, and their ability, their desire to bring harm to a place that has only existed, that worship, justice, and liberation be made palpable and present for all persons. It shows, Michelle, the disease of American democracy. If you can call America a democracy.
If I can just interrupt here, we're going to go back to the rotunda.
Reverend Lamar, if you could just hold on for a second here.
Christopher Macchio, opera tenor, singing "O America." Let's listen.
You are calling me to pay true to thee, to thee. I will be.
And we'll continue our discussion. We'll just note that Hakeem Jeffries, the House Democratic leader, is on his way in as key individuals begin to file in. And I believe over his shoulder, I see Vice President Harris and President Biden all together.
Reverend Lamar, we interrupted you briefly. We wanted to ask how you were telling us how that moment when that sign in front of your historic church was destroyed by these rally goers. How did that sit with you?
As much as we congratulate ourselves in America that there were many miles to go, and that there are persons who still believe that it is their work and their right to establish a politics of fear, especially for those of us who demand justice for all persons. And the challenge that remains in American democracy is that it was built on exclusion. Can you truly call an experiment democratic when from its foundation it only included property white men, excluded the natives, excluded the Africans, and the progeny politically of those exclusionary democratists. The disease of American democracy is people still believe that you can have a democracy and exclude human beings. That is why the push, the tug, the strenuous fight continues, because there is no democracy that excludes the participation of all human beings.
Before we let you go, Reverend Lamar, what is your work these next 4 years? How are you preparing your congregation to meet this moment? How are you meeting this moment?
Well, we have met the moment, first of all, in stillness, listening to the music of the universe, the music of justice, the music of fraternity. And we have decided that instead of acting quickly, we will gather to plan and discuss the best way forward for justice-loving people, and we will move together. At the last Trump inauguration, I think many of us were moving emotionally, and that was appropriate. This time, we move strategically, planfully, powerfully, bringing together dangling discord, as King said, into a symphony of what is possible when all human beings are respected and allowed to thrive together.
That is the Reverend William Lamar IV of Metropolitan AME Church. Reverend Lamar, thank you so much for joining us. We may call you back later to respond to the speech if we have time. Thank you so much for sharing these insights right now.
And we've just caught a glimpse of Amy Klobuchar, the Minnesota senator, a Democrat who will do the invocation today. A reminder that this is a civic ceremony,
Honorable
in effect,
the call to order.
Bipartisan.
The House of Representatives, the Honorable Go Kevin ahead. F. McCumber.
It's the call to order. She, as a member of the committee that sort of runs these inaugural ceremonies, will issue the call to order.
Thank you.
The invocation will be given by spiritual leaders, as it always is.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. Appreciate the correction. She was walking in alongside Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, and here's a glimpse of President-elect Trump, who will appear in the Capitol shortly. Before we go to that, though, let's go to Hogan Gidley, who has worked for the President, former Deputy Press Secretary for the Trump White House and campaign. Hogan, where are you? What are you experiencing?
I'm in the Capitol right now, in my office. I also do some work for the Speaker of the House, so I've had the privilege of being here today and seeing some of these amazing scenes and sights, sounds. This has been really, really nice, and so I'm excited to go back up there when I'm off the radio with you and go watch the rest of this inauguration.
What are some of the challenges and opportunities of this moment as the president tries to get a fast start, has a large number of executive orders he wants to get out of the door possibly today?
Well, I think it is a tale of two presidencies. The first time he came in, I believe in the first 24 hours, he signed one executive order. Joe Biden signed 19. President Trump had 500 staffers. Joe Biden had 1,500. So Trump was, you know, coming in kind of new and fresh, but not having the organization, not having the streamlined system that he has in place today. And so what you're going to see is kind of the culmination of being around the block a few times, having the wisdom and discernment of having been president before, you know, the pitfalls, knowing the challenges, but also knowing how to get things accomplished more quickly. So you're going to see that obviously today with the executive orders and other things. Preparation to go on day one. So it's going to move quickly.
Escorting the President of the United States.
Let's give a listen to the Capitol
President
Rotunda.
Of the United States. Ranking member of the Joint Congressional Committee on Inaugural Ceremonies, the Honorable Deb Fischer. House Democratic Leader, the Honorable Hakeem Jeffries, and Senate Majority Secretary, the Honorable Robert Duncan.
And those officials, Democratic and Republican, walking in. For those listening on the radio, this is live special coverage.
Ladies
from
and gentlemen, the President of the United States, the Honorable Joseph R. Biden, Jr., and Vice President of the United States, the Honorable Kamala Davy Harris.
Hail to the Chief. Play one more time for President Biden.
And we have to note that President Trump did not attend the inaugural ceremonies for his successor. So we did not see this moment where the outgoing president was on hand to greet the incoming president. That did not happen 4 years ago.
I will note on a completely different note, the weather in Washington yesterday made me think there's an entirely different meaning to hail to the chief. It was hailing yesterday on this pre-inauguration weekend. President Biden, though, manages to a cheerful expression on the way in, as did Vice President Harris, I will say, chatting
Ladies
with a few people.
Escorting the vice president-elect, the Executive Director for the Joint Congressional Committee on Inaugural Ceremonies, Mr. Michael Wagner, Senate Deputy Sergeant-at-Arms and Doorkeeper Jason Bell, and House Deputy Sergeant-at-Arms Mr. Sean Keating.
Hogan Gidley, we've got just a few seconds as people walk in, as J.D. Vance is brought in. You said you're working for Speaker Johnson. How ready is Congress to move on the president's agenda, do you think?
The Speaker's been pretty clear. Trump's going to call the plays, and we're going to run them. So I expect Speaker Johnson and Leader Thune to move together quickly, to work in a way that I don't think we've seen Congress operate in quite some time, with a level of rapidity that is so foreign to the people here in D.C., but you're going on Trump time. And he likes to do things quickly. He likes to get things going. So I think right out of the gate, whether this reconciliation bill is one or two, it's going to be moving pretty quickly for Washington standards to accomplish some things for the American people.
And exceptionally narrow congressional majority for Speaker Johnson, and a little more room in the Senate, but still it's a body that's hard to move. So it'll be a challenge, and we'll see how far they get. Hogan Gidley, former Deputy Press Secretary for the Trump White House and the Trump campaign. Pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
And we'll mention that as Hogan was talking, J.D. Vance came in. Red tie, American flag lapel, and awaiting his turn to be sworn in. What we expect in the next few minutes is the swearing in of the Vice President, and then the swearing in of the President-elect, who will stop calling that in a few minutes here.
I have to note that the gallery there is so crowded that all these dignitaries have to some of them have to squeeze past each other in order to get to their assigned seats.
But it's fascinating to that.
It's like almost like a movie theater where you have to kind
of
squeeze by people.
Yes, but there's J.D. Vance, then you have Don Trump Jr., you have Sundar Pichai, the tech executive. You have quite a mixture of people.
Ladies and gentlemen, escorting the President-elect, the Staff Director for the Joint Congressional Committee on Inaugural Ceremonies, Seth Farah.
I will just note that while this is all happening, President Biden has just announced more pardons. He is not yet done being president.
You better give us some news before we get to these swearings in. Go for it.
Yes. So he is commuting the life sentence imposed on Leonard Peltier. He is also exercising under his power under the Constitution to pardon members of his own family. These would be preemptive pardons: James B. Biden, Sarah Jones Biden, Valerie Biden Owens, John T. Owens, Francis W. Biden. He says that the issuance of these pardons should not be mistaken as an acknowledgement that they are engaged in any wrongdoing, nor should acceptance be misconstrued as an admission of guilt for any offense.
So, remarkable statement there. James Biden, one of the names you gave, the president's brother, does a lot of business and was questioned in a lot of ways, and Republicans had demanded investigations of the Biden family.
Exactly. And so the president here is using his pardon power and he did this earlier today. There was an announcement that he was pardoning members of the January 6th committee and Dr. Anthony Fauci, among others. And what he seems to be doing here is saying that investigations can wreak havoc on people's
lives.
And
we are about to receive the President-elect, Donald Trump.
A round of applause as he walks into the Capitol Rotunda. Shakes a hand or two on his way in. Air kiss with Melania.
Seemingly warm greeting with President Biden for a few more minutes. President for a few more minutes. A warm greeting to his selected vice president.
The president with, I would say, a purple tie today. People look for the symbolism in colors. He didn't go with bright red, something a little closer to purple. We're looking at video shots at the Capitol Rotunda, where if you're just joining us, about 750 people are on hand. Many of the most powerful and prominent people in the U.S. government and in business are on hand, and also a large number of people in what is effect the overflow room there, the U.S. Capitol Visitor Center, where people who would have been on the mall are present watching on video.
Ladies and gentlemen, please be seated.
And now we begin, most likely, with Amy Klobuchar, the Democratic senator. I'll note that 4 years ago, it was a Republican senator who was the master of ceremonies for the inauguration of a Democratic president. It feels fitting, perhaps, or at least fitting to the moment or the intentions of the moment, that you would have someone from the other party who is effectively running the show. President Trump, Vice President Vance, have it sharing a word or two before they get started.
Please welcome Woman of the Joint Congressional Committee on Inaugural Ceremonies, the Honorable Amy Klobuchar.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the 60th presidential inauguration. Today, President-elect Trump and Vice President-elect Vance will take their oaths of office, and we will witness the peaceful transfer of power at the heart of our democracy. For the past year, I've chaired the Inaugural Ceremony Committee, which includes the leadership of Congress from both parties. We thank the committee and Capitol staff and law enforcement who worked so hard over the last year, and especially the last 3 days. You've done a beautiful job, and you have shown grace under pressure. Our theme this year is our enduring democracy. The presence of so many presidents and vice presidents here today is truly a testament to that endurance. We welcome President Biden and Dr. Biden. We welcome Vice President Harris and Doug Emhoff, President Obama, President Clinton and Secretary Clinton, President Bush and Laura Bush, Vice President Pence, Vice President Quayle and Marilyn Quayle. The Justices of the United States Supreme Court are with us, all nine of them I counted, and of course, the Trump and Vance families. This ceremony marks what will soon be 250 years of our democracy. It is the moment when leaders, elevated by the will of the people, promise to be faithful to our Constitution, to cherish and defend it. It is the moment when they become, as we all should be, the guardians of our country. Through war and peace, through adversity and prosperity, we hold this inauguration every 4 years, and today it falls on Martin Luther King Day, a further reminder that we must strive to uphold the values enshrined in our Constitution, the freedoms, the liberties, and, as is inscribed on the entrance of the United States Supreme Court, equal justice under law. But what makes this moment more than a passing ceremony is all who are watching it across the country, the people of this nation, the ordinary people doing extraordinary things. President Kennedy, who at one point worked as a senator in this building and would often walk through this very rotunda, once said, "In a democracy, every citizen, regardless of interest in politics, holds office. Every one of us is in a position of responsibility. With responsibility of citizenship comes an obligation not to seek out malice, as President Lincoln once reminded us, but to view others with a generosity of spirit, despite our differences. With that responsibility of leadership comes an obligation to stand our ground when we must and find common ground when we can. With everything swirling around us, the hot mess of division, it is on all of us, to quote an incredible songwriter who just happened to be born in date, to ensure that our nation's democracy is our shelter from the storm. There's a reason this ceremony takes place at the Capitol. In other countries, it might be in a presidential palace or a gilded executive office building. Here, it is traditionally held at the Capitol, the People's House. It is a fitting reminder of the system of checks and balances that is the very foundation of our government, three equal branches of government. That is how, for nearly 250 years, our great American experiment, grounded in the rule of law, has endured. So, as we inaugurate a new president and vice president, let us remember that the power of those in this room comes from the people. The construction workers who build our country, the teachers and healthcare workers who nurture us, the troops defending our freedoms, and yes, firefighters in Los Angeles putting themselves on the line for us. Our democracy's strength and grit must match theirs. May God bless our nation. Thank you.
Senator Klobuchar making statements that would be routine at any inauguration, but when a Democrat talks about leaders promising to be faithful to the Constitution and quoting Lincoln about malice toward none, they also fall in a particular way at this particular inauguration.
Good afternoon. Endurance through the years is the ultimate test. To persevere through time is the truest measure of an idea, an institution, and a nation. Our founders wrote the Constitution so that America could stand all the twists and turns of time. They wrote it to guide us and to preserve forever our right of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But as much as the truths and principles enshrined in our Constitution remain the same, our democracy promises the American people the power to change, to chart their own destiny. That's the beauty. That is the importance of democracy. It allows the endurance, the permanence of a nation through change. It allows nations like our United States both to avoid the obstacles and to seize the opportunities God has placed before us, all while staying true to our founding principles. Today is our country's 60th inauguration ceremony. Like all the others before it, it is a celebration of our right to set our uniquely American course. The past several years have been trying at times for many, many Americans, and also for the nations of the free world that we humbly strive to lead. In November, Americans chose again to steer this nation towards greatness, the secure, safe, and prosperous future that our founders envisioned for all of us. And today, we celebrate not only their decision to do so, but also the simple right and wisdom of a free people to make their own choice, so that their nation might endure. And now, allow me to welcome Archbishop Timothy Dolan and Reverend Franklin Graham, who will deliver our invocation. Please rise.
We just heard from Senator Deb Fischer, Republican of Nebraska. She, along with Amy Klobuchar, head the Joint Congressional Committee on Inaugural Ceremonies. They are, in essence, the hosts of this event today.
Be still and know that I am God, supreme among the nations, supreme on the earth. Let us pray. Remembering General George Washington on his knees at Valley Forge, recalling Abraham Lincoln at his second inaugural, with malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right, be the right. Remembering General George Patton's instructions to his soldiers as they began the Battle of the Bulge 8 decades ago, pray in fighting, pray alone, pray with others, pray by night, pray by day. the Reverend Martin Luther King, who warned, without God, our efforts turn to ashes. We, of this one nation under God, humbled by our claim that in God we trust, gather indeed this inauguration day to pray for our President Donald J. Trump, his family, his advisors, his cabinet, his aspirations, his vice president, for the Lord's blessings upon Joseph Biden, for our men and women in uniform, for each other whose hopes are stoked this new year, this inauguration day. We cannot rely upon that prayer from the Bible, upon which our president will soon place his hand in oath, as we make our own the supplications of King Solomon for wisdom as he began his governance. Out of our wisdom you set man to govern your creatures, to govern in holiness and justice, to render justice with integrity. Give our leader wisdom, for he is your servant, aware of his own weakness and brevity of life. If wisdom is not from you, be not with him, he shall be held in no esteem. Send wisdom from heavens that she may be with him, that he may know your designs. Please, God, bless America. Please mend her every flaw. You are the God in whom we trust, who lives and reigns forever and ever.
And apologies for the difficulties with the audio feed from the Capitol. We're working on that.
There are times I'm sure you thought it was pretty dark. But look what God has done. We praise him and give him glory. Let us pray. Our Father and our God, thou hast said, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. As the prophet Daniel prayed, blessed be the name of God forever and ever. For wisdom and might are his. He changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings. He raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. Our Father, today, as President Donald J. Trump takes the oath of office once again, we come to say thank you, O Lord our God. Father, when Donald Trump's enemies thought he was down and out, you and you alone saved his life and raised him up with strength and power by your mighty hand. We pray for President Trump that you'll watch over, protect, guide, direct him. Give him your wisdom from your throne on high. We ask that you would bless him and that our nation would be blessed through him. We also ask that you would bless and protect Melania as First Lady. We thank you for the beauty, the warmth, and grace that she shows not only to this nation, but to the whole world. We thank you for Vice President-elect J.D. Vance and his wife Usha and their young family. May he be a strength to President Trump, to stand beside him, to hold up his arms like Aaron held up the arms of Moses in the midst of battle. The prophet Samuel reminded the people, it was you that brought them up from the land of Egypt. And he said, now stand still that I may reason with you before the Lord. So Father, we take this moment to stand still, to remember the great things that you have done for this nation. Thank you for the protection, the bounty, the freedoms that we so enjoy. We remember to keep our eyes fixed on you, and may our hearts be inclined to your voice. We know that America can never be great again if we turn our backs on you. We ask for your help, and we pray all of this in the name of the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, your Son, my Savior, and our Redeemer, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Associate Justice Kavanaugh to administer the Vice President.
We just heard from the Reverend Franklin Graham, the son of Billy Graham, prominent evangelical leader. And before him, we heard from His Eminence Timothy Michael Cardinal Dolan, the Archbishop of New York. And we will now see the Vice President take the oath of office. It will be administered.
Opera, some folks sing flat, some sing like sawing wood, I'm one like that. But when the dicky birds sing in the trees,